Hi, I'm Rick Steves. As the world grapples with the coronavirus and news changes almost daily about it, let's continue to enjoy the many cultures and experiences that await our discovery when this crisis is old news. Thanks for joining us for Travel with Rick Steves. What you need to know to make an overseas trip with a teenager or a preteen can be a lot different from the advice you give parents of a toddler. Coming up in the hour ahead, we'll look at what you should know to make it a trip for everyone to enjoy. And we'll look at Copenhagen's experiment with a communal self-governed neighborhood called Kristiania from a pair of documentary filmmakers who've studied the legendary neighborhood up close. Let's start the hour with a look at how cities around the world are bursting into megacities and the example Venice can offer about urban living. It's amazing to think that in the 19th century, about 3% of humanity lived in cities. And today, that number is 50%, and it's growing rapidly. We live in the age of the megalopolis. We're going to talk about that now with Dr. Salvatore Settis. Dr. Settis is an emeritus professor of the history of classical art and archaeology at the Scuola Normale Superiore in Pisa, in Italy. He's an archaeologist and an art historian. He's the chairman of the Louvre Museum's Scientific Council. He's the author of several books on art history, and he's known as the conscience of Italy for his role in spotlighting the neglect of Italy's national cultural heritage. His book is If Venice Dies, and it's a look not only at Venice and the struggles of Venice in the 21st century, but at the increasing urbanization of civilization in general. Dr. Settis, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you talk about If Venice Dies? How much of it is about Venice, and how much of it is it about the changing urban landscape across the planet?
Well, my intention in writing this book was to focus on Venice in order to make people meditate about what's going on a global scale, about what I would call the shape, the form of the city. So Venice as an example, as a counterexample, contrasting some of the most disturbing features of urbanization in our current world.
And it is quite dramatic what's going on. In your book, you explain there are 15 megalopoli, I guess is the word, that have over 20 million people. Is the advent of these massive cities, 20 million people cities, people have to live somewhere, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Why does it concern you?
Well, I'm concerned about the quality of life of those people, because although this urbanization may look something that happens naturally, it is also prompted by economic forces. It is a concentration of workforce, which is not necessarily living in good conditions in order to create profit for a very low number of people. So it's the usual formula of 99% versus 1%. The megalopolis is a consequence of a commodification of the world, a general commodification of the world that includes, to an increasing extent, human beings.
This is just a very efficient thing for the elites to have a concentration of workforce where people who will be able to work cheaper and produce more by being right there at the center of production. Is that what you're saying?
Produce more and also buy more, become consumers, because the workers are simultaneously consumers. So there is a vicious or virtuous, if you so wish, circle between being workers and being consumers. And I think that there are two features which are combined normally. One is the megalopolis, the big urban center, as you mentioned. The other one is the verticalization of architecture. In my book, I use as an example Chongqing in China, which had 600,000 people in the 1930s, and now is 34 million people living in it. I have tried to contrast this with a different forma urbis, or shape of the city, a form of the city in which there is some sort of harmony, of balance between the body of the citizen and the body of the city, where the citizen doesn't feel. The one thing I'm saying is that it is good that we preserve diversity in urban form, and preserving diversity means, among other things, saving Venice and saving the other historical city. Also because there is an even more disturbing feature of the urban form as it is taking shape in our time, and that is the fact that while ancient cities, historical cities, had a boundary, around the city. In the case of Venice, the lagoon. In case of other cities, the walls around the city. Now the boundaries around the city, the boundaries of the city, are being gradually substituted by boundaries within the city, which is boundaries between the gentrified areas for the haves and the have-nots.
You can see that in Paris very well.
This you can see in Paris. This you can see also in Rome or in Milan, to mention Italian cities. The gated communities are increasingly frequent all around the world, but the gated communities are for those who are wealthy or relatively wealthy, while the other people is condemned to live in favelas, like in Brazil, or in bidonville, like they say in French.
I'm just thinking of Paris. I was just in Paris with a group, and I was explaining how they protect the center of Paris, where everything is the Mansart scale, you know, 6 or 8 story tall Mansart buildings, so you can see the domes, and you can see the spires, and you can see the Eiffel Tower. And then right when you get to the periphery, this big boulevard that circles the city, outside of that, it's just no holds barred, and it's like keeping the cattle at bay. Outside of that periphery, it's just a forest of skyscrapers. Within that, you've got the elegance of the classic people-friendly city. That is, in a sense, a gated community because it's unaffordable for a lot of people and they end up outside of town in the rougher, downtrodden neighborhoods.
This is what's going on, and your description is absolutely perfect, I think. But this involves a separation within society, which is socially, potentially very dangerous for the future, which is not precisely what I would call democracy.
You have it boiling over like we see with the poor and the immigrant communities in Paris, and maybe we'll be seeing more of that as we have more of this gated community approach to cities and skyscrapers.
This is what's going on all over the world. Therefore, I think that reflecting, meditating over the urban form as it has been formed over centuries in a city like Venice can be useful for us to think. This is why I say that Venice is a thinking machine. Mm-hmm. It's a machine where you might be, while you are walking within the city, you create, without even noticing it, a relationship with the architectures around you, which are harmonious. And you can think, is this a better life or a worse life of living than being in a place like, let's say, Chongqing?
Dr. Salvatore Settis is helping us rethink the design of our cities right now on Travel with Rick Steves. He's a prominent archaeologist, art historian, and cultural critic from Pisa, and his book is called If Venice Dies. And Dr. Settis, you talked about the, quote, language of skyscrapers. How is a skyscraper is a good thing, and how is it something that is indicative of a problem the way we are designing our communities?
Well, I was talking about the rhetoric of skyscrapers, not just generally, but in relation to Italy today, because Italy is a country almost without skyscrapers, which were actually invented in the U.S. But in recent times, it has become fashionable to think or to believe that a contemporary city in Italy is not contemporary enough unless it has one or more skyscrapers, which is something that happened in Milan on the occasion of the International Expo. So they built a number of skyscrapers, which I understand are mostly empty. Mm. So they are good for developers, not necessarily for people.
Mm-hmm. So this really is a challenge for society because we are compromising free enterprise for the collective joy of having a people-friendly living space. I mean, in Rome, I understand there has been a limit where no building would go taller than St. Peter's Basilica. In Milano, there was the ethic that you would not build a skyscraper taller than the Virgin Mary atop the Duomo or the cathedral. Yeah. In London, you protect lines of sight so you can still see those beautiful Christopher Wren domes. And while they have plenty of skyscrapers, they've tried to protect the beautiful vistas of the city. Is there a working compromise here, or do you find that developers ultimately will have the ultimate authority to blow all of this sensibility out of the water and just build bigger and bigger buildings?
Well, this is what is actually happening. And an interesting case is what a great architect, Renzo Piano, did in Turin, where he accepted to build a skyscraper which was originally supposed to be higher than the Mole Antonelliana, which, according to city regulations, the highest possible building at the limit. Then there were many protests, and he decided, and his patrons decided to reduce the height of that skyscraper by 1 foot, which is 1 foot less than the Mole Antonelliana. But this is not a sign of respect. This is rather a sort of a sneer.
It's gaming the system, yes.
So I think developers are already winning. Mm. And the point is up to which point they will, and whether or not at some point there will be some reactions in at least some cities around the world.
Is there a city, a great city, that you think is doing a good job? And is the result of that something that the average person actually appreciates?
Well, I think that the most important point you are making is the distance, which we might consider natural, but it is actually unnatural between the elite and the rest of the society. Because this means that the elite, if the elite develops a taste that the elite members are incapable of transferring, of communicating to other citizens. And I think that in this respect, education, mostly in schools, but also through museums and other cultural institutions, should be considered responsible for making, not for diffusing. I don't have a doctrine to impose to other people, but I think that thinking in critical terms, not being content with accepting whatever happens around us, but just reflecting about what's going on around us, reflecting and trying to promote diversity. So I think we are promoting diversity in every field. We are promoting diversity among cultures, diversity in religion, diversity in sexual orientation, diversity in whatever other field. So why don't we think also about cities in terms not of homogenization, but in terms of diversity? And in this respect, the most diverse city I know of is Venice.
Venice, but it's just a small town of 70,000 people or 50,000 people.
Yes, it is small, but it is a city that can give you a sense of relationship between the body of the citizen and the body of the architecture around him.
Dr. Salvatore Settis, author of If Venice Dies, thank you so much for a very thought-provoking book and the work you're doing to help our ever more urban civilization enjoy livable spaces.
And thank you very much indeed for this very nice conversation.
Up next, we explore Copenhagen's urban experiment with communal living. And later, it's tips for travel with tweens and teens on Travel with Rick Steves.